Hi, I'm Kate Hudson.
And my name is Oliver Hudson.
We wanted to do something that highlighted our relationship.
And what it's like to be siblings.
We are a sibling rivalry.
No, no.
Sibling rivalry.
Don't do that with your mouth.
Sibling rivalry.
That's good. So this was really a fun day. We recorded this in quarantine, so it was via Zoom. And one of my favorite sibling trios, we got to interview the Haim sisters. I've gotten to know Esty over the years, and my partner Danny, my life partner Danny, has known the girls for a long time. So it was really fun to talk with them about how they grew up. Their family was always musical. They had a family band growing up. They lived in the Valley in Los Angeles. And it was wonderful to see how close they are and how still close they are, how they navigate through working together and being siblings. And it seems like they've have this really beautiful balance. And anyway, it was an absolute blast. They have a new album out that is so awesome called Women in Music Part 3. And I suggest downloading that whole thing and listening to it because it is so wonderful. And I hope you enjoy this episode. Here is the Haim Sisters.
Danielle and Esty's after proms were the best. I don't know what my parents were thinking, but they decided to go out of town the weekend of Danielle's prom.
God, rookie mistake, mom and dad.
So
rookie
lucky.
Mistake.
What were they thinking?
Like they were like, we're randomly, my parents never go out of town. They're like always with us constantly.
Maybe they knew what they
and
were doing.
That one weekend, yeah. It was like,
we're gonna take a trip. And it was the weekend of Danielle's prom. And I'll never forget, I was a freshman and Danielle was a senior. And I was like to all my friends all week, I was like, I'm so cool, guys. Like, my sister's going to make me go to her after prom. Like, I'm so cool. I had braces. I was like,
Were you wearing a retainer or something?
Exactly. And literally, like, before I was like texting Danielle, like, dude, send me the address. Like, where's the after prom? And she literally was like, you're not coming. What are you talking about? Like, pulled the whole senior freshman like dynamic on me at the last second. And I was so bummed.
Where did you guys grow up?
We grew up in the Valley.
In the Valley.
Valley Girl.
Valley Girl.
Let's talk about the order of you ladies.
Okay. So
who's the most orderly?
Well, no, first firstborn.
Me also. I was the firstborn. I had 3 years of alone time with my parents. It was pure bliss.
Then it got all fucked up.
3 glorious years.
and then I fucked it up.
Danielle came along and fucked it all up. There's actually a really funny video of us visiting my mom in the hospital when Alana was born. And it's me like whispering to Danielle. I was 6, Danielle was 3. And I'm like whispering to Danielle and we're like laughing. And my dad was videoing us and was like, what's so funny, girls? And I was like, I'm not going to tell you. And my dad was like, come on. Are you excited about your little sister being born? And I was like, I just told Danielle shit's about to change.
And it changed for the better, bitch.
Funny.
Yeah, you made my life so much better. It's true.
Oh,
yeah, I'm the oldest.
Right, so then Danielle.
I'm the middle.
I'm baby.
Do you guys feel like you have a very typical, I mean, since you're all girls, because we did this episode with this man who wrote a book called The Sibling Effect, and we talked about the order of children. Do you feel like you fit into that dynamic, like older child, middle child, baby?
I've always wanted
that. I know.
Did he tell you like the traits of each sibling?
There's the stereotypes of it, but then there's the actual research behind it. But there is a favorite child. And
who's the favorite, girls?
I don't know. Esty thinks that she's the favorite.
It's me.
I know middle child. I'm a middle child. So middle child is definitely, I think, didn't he say they become usually the ones that are the overachievers.
That makes a lot of sense.
Danielle's like, I'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Like, and the baby of the family is usually the fuck up. Like, no one right. cares about the baby of the family. The worst sibling is the baby. Right. But the middle well, child.
The baby is the one I think that's the luckiest because, A, by the time they come around, they're like, the parents are right. like, just do whatever the fuck you want. I'm so tired of being a parent.
Yep.
And also, the youngest child gets to, like, has two usually cool role models that can, like, tell them what's cool and what isn't.
Are your sisters cool? I mean, do you,
my
do
sisters
you find
are,
them to be
my
cool?
My sisters are exponentially cooler than I am. Exponentially cooler than I am.
Where in the Valley did you guys live?
We grew up in Valley Village.
Oh, yeah.
Which is was not cool.
Right. It's cool now.
It's
thank
cool.
you.
I mean, the fact that the Valley is like not, I mean, I still feel like being from the Valley still gets shit for being from the Valley still, which I take pride in. I'm all about it. Like I'm fully an 818 Valley girl. But when we were growing up, it was like a lot of just like all our neighbors were like in their 90s, their 80s or their 90s. So now going back home, now it's like all kids. I'm like, this seems like so much fun. Like my dream was to be like, my neighbor's my best friend. And then we fall in love and then we get married. Like that was like my dream scenario. And it was like my neighbor was like a 90-year-old.
Yeah. We were like, life isn't Dawson's Creek when you're 14?
Yeah. Like, I'm like, what? I wish my life was Dawson's Creek. But the Valley, I mean, the thing that I love about the Valley is there's still some places that are still around that are just super iconic. Like Oil Can Harry's has been around.
Yeah. Are you guys Dawson Creek fans? Because, you know, Oliver was.
Why do you think I said it?
Yeah.
Why do you think I said it, Oliver?
Yeah. Ollie was that guy.
I was Eddie Doling.
I bumped it. I said it. And I was waiting for Kate to spike it.
Eddie Doling. One of my great roles.
We also all worked on Ventura Boulevard at one point in our lives. Like, it's very much.
Oh,
like,
I worked really?
At the Urban Outfitters.
Yeah. Okay.
And the Daily Grill on Laurel and Ventura.
I also worked at American Rag. That was my first job.
Yeah.
Not
that was
Valley.
The spot.
Do you see what I mean? My sisters are cooler than me. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, I'm working at Urban Outfitters, and Danielle's like, bitch, I'm going over the hill. I'm going to La Brea. I'm working at the coolest store in LA.
Wasn't your mom a teacher at Buckley?
My mom would talk about teaching at Buckley in the late 70s and the 80s with like such lore. It was like folklore. It was like, and then, you know, Paul Newman came in for a parent teacher conference and I got needed a lifesaver because I was drowning in his eyes and like like stuff like that. I'm like, mom,
my mom's like from Philly, like she's from like the suburb yeah. of Philly, and like she came, her dad got my grandpa got a job in LA, and so he like uprooted his family and moved to LA.
Oh.
And then my mom loved playing guitar, but my grandpa was like, you're never gonna make money playing guitar, you're gonna be a teacher. So my mom was like in the middle of getting her teaching credential, and to get your teaching credential, you need teaching
experience.
Aid. Like you need experience. So you like understudy a teacher for like a year. And so she got like a job at Buckley, just getting like the,
credits. Teaching credential yeah. credits.
Right.
Credits, and then the teacher ended up having a heart attack. Her first 2 weeks there, the teacher that she was studying under had a heart attack in the parking lot.
Jeez.
At Buckley and died.
At Buckley, and she passed away, unfortunately. And Buckley was like, do you just want the job? Because I guess you don't need a teaching credential to
for
teach.
For private school, you don't. For private school, you don't.
You just like cruise in, also, like, hey, I'm going to teach.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess so. So she became like the sole art teacher
at 22 years old.
Hey, so what was the vibe growing up in your household? Like just the overall, what was it like?
It was, I mean, when we were like really young, like Esty would, I feel like the way that we would like all have fun would be like Esty would create these shows and we would like act in them. Like I feel like that was like a big part of our childhood. Like
yeah,
it was a lot of dancing.
Like, as you would be like the teacher in Black Swan, she'd be like, attack it, attack it, attack it.
I took it very seriously.
Yeah, it was no joke. There's a dance. We've been trying to find it because my parents have been on like a crazy nostalgia kick during this time. And there's one video that I remember seeing like years ago of we did a dance to the theme song of Friends. Mm-hmm. And it was on our basketball court, and it was like a lot of like running and then clapping. It was like a lot of like that. And it was, we did like a whole show.
Sounds like a viral TikTok idea.
I mean, just not raw,
you know?
Not so it was very free spirited, very open.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're lucky that we have parents that really supported our creativity. And like, I think really when it comes down to it, they wanted us to do things like dancing all the time because it tired us out because we had so much energy. And like, by the time 5 o'clock rolled around,
think yourself. Think it was more you.
You screwed everything up. Yes. You just had so much energy. And
sorry. Sorry. I did have a lot of energy, but I mean, like growing up, you know, we had a mom who was like super artsy fartsy, like played guitar, like loved doing like, my mom was like the art docent in our class. She would like donate her time to like do paper mache masks in my class. Like, very maternal, very cool. And my dad was, you know, a soccer player. And so he loved sports, but he also was like a drummer, like as a, like he was a drummer hobbyist. So my mom and my dad, like on their first, like when they got married, their first dance, instead of having a first dance, they had a first song. Mm. And my dad played drums, my mom played guitar and sang.
Cute.
At their wedding.
Yeah.
So then when we were growing up, I think that they kind of instilled in us like this love of music, because that's kind of the reason they fell in love, was their like their shared love of like the practicar of music. And so we all grew up, you know, hearing songs on the radio and then learning them by ear. And so eventually my dad like woke up from a dream one night and was like, we're going to make a band with the kids.
And how old were you guys?
I was 10. So Danielle was 7 and Alana was 4.
Oh my God.
Wow. That's Alana, what the hell were you playing?
Like literally like a cowbell. Like I was not, it's not like I was this like wunderkind that was like playing like Tchaikovsky at the age of 4. Like, no, I was playing like a cowbell. Whatever like I could lift. I mean, 4 years old, you're like, you don't even really have strength.
And were you guys down with it? Were you like, oh, this is cool? Or like, Dad, what?
Well, yeah. But
playing songs, we were like playing like Beatles songs and stuff. So it was like super, it was just like fun. I mean, when we got a little older, it was like, is this cool? Like,
well, what? The other, like, I remember being 11, like a year after we had kind of formed this band with our parents. And I remember, like, I didn't really talk about it. It was just, I thought it was like something that you do when you turn 10. And like, I therefore thought everyone had a family band. So like when my friends would be like, I'm going to the Fashion Square on Saturday, do you guys want to come? And I'd be like, wait a minute, like, when are you going to rehearse? And they'd be like, for what? And I'd be like, with your band, like with your family, with your parents, like, when are you doing that?
Wow. So you, like, thought this is what everybody
I thought did. It was everyone did. And then I had a realization like, oh no, like my family is just a little weird.
But where did you perform?
So St. Francis de Sales Fair. Yeah.
The St. Francis de Sales Fair, that's like, which was next door to Dixie Cannon Elementary.
It's like the private school.
They had like it was like the fair every year.
The church fair
that we would play. And then we would play like the Sherman Oaks Street Fair.
It
was like there was a stage right in front of a Party City that we would play. Oh, it was good.
That's so
and
cute.
All I wanted as we grew older was like to play bar mitzvahs and weddings so that I could afford a car.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents were like, that's never going to happen. You're only playing for charity until you turn 18.
And then do whatever you want.
And then do whatever
you want. Then you're someone else's problem.
Wow. Yeah. So you played for free.
You played for free.
Okay, good.
And we honestly, and I feel like every time we talk about, it was called Rockenheim. And
Stop.
Swear to God. With no G.
Rockenheim, Rockenheim. And like whenever we talk about it, like I just want to like make it clear, like we were not a good band. Like we were really not good. Like we practiced so much, and still like I look like in my mind I was like, oh my God, we were like you too. Like we were the best band ever. And then I watched like videos of it, and we were awful. Like we were like honestly really bad.
We were
like,
really we were bad.
Not good.
We were really bad.
But it was fun. It was totally fun.
Did you gravitate towards the instruments that you guys now play, or when you were younger, or was that like a shift?
Sort of.
Well, it all started with, like, my dad always had, like, a drum kit set up in the living room. So, like, we all kind of collectively started on drums and then moved on to, like, my mom had this piano that got handed down to her from her, like, great-great-grandmother. I don't know how we got it. It was, like,
yeah, no idea. Piano.
But we had this, like, piano, so we kind of, like, moved over to piano. And then I think once, like, Rockenheim was kind of starting, Danielle just, like, there's like videos of Danielle like as a baby walking towards the guitar. I think that she like
in she her, always like, gravitated towards the guitar.
Always gravitated towards guitar and like always really wanted to play guitar. So Danielle kind of moved to guitar. Esty tried guitar.
I was awful.
Esty didn't really like take it as take
Esty. Like, Esty turned into depressedy after her 6-year-old sister was exponentially better than her at an instrument when she was 9. And I think my dad saw that I was like super discouraged. And I have this like very vivid memory of my dad playing Stop Making Sense for me. And I remember seeing Tina Weymouth and being like, oh, she's so pretty and cool. And she looks like Princess Peach. And she's like, what is this 4-stringed instrument she's playing? I didn't know what a bass was. You know what, like guitar makes. Like those are kind of the instruments that like, and like when you listen to a song when you're younger, you hear the melody, you hear the words, and you kind of like know the beat, but like bass is not easy for like a kid to hear. So I didn't really know what it was. And then my dad was like, see, like, look at how cool that girl is. And I was like, I want to be like her.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it was an image thing before it was an musical thing.
100%. I was right. Like, I just want to look cool. Like, what can I do to look cool? And then Alana kind of just played everything.
I was always like the puzzle piece of the band. Like I always loved percussion, but I also played keyboard. And then when I saw Danielle playing guitar, I got jealous and was like, I want to play that too. And so then I moved over to guitar. But it kind of like shows even in Haim, like when you see us live, like I pretty much play. I have like a whole like wizard setup. It really, honestly, my job hasn't changed since I was 4.
That's so cute. I want a wizard setup. I want a wizard room.
Yes.
We can help you set one up. I mean, we're pretty like the expertise when it comes to a wizard room is
you need like timbales, you need like a cowbell. Even the one thing that I never got to have that I always wanted was wind chimes.
So, oh yeah. Yes.
You know you're the coolest.
When yes, you just good. A wind chime.
Have you guys ever had any wind chimes in your tracks?
Yeah. Might start today.
It might be. It's today might be the day.
It's chime time.
We need to like bring that back. That's like early 80s.
At least just open the song with it. You know.
What about flute?
Esty played flute.
I played flute. Jeff, like the Jethro Tull of it all is not really like something that I think that we would get down with at this juncture in our career.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I will say this, Kate, I'm waiting for a Kate Hudson record.
It's coming.
I'm like,
I know.
I'm patiently waiting. I feel like we've been talking about this
for too long.
For so long.
Function of Beauty. I've been loving my shampoo, actually. I'm a big fan of clean product, no sulfates, no parabens, and really trying to just make sure that the things that I use every day are pretty clean. And so learning about Function of Beauty has been really nice. It's hard to find good hair product that's clean. It's customizable. So you can go on their site. They just sort of ask you the things that you want. You basically customize your own shampoo and conditioner. You can use dyes if you want. You don't have to use dyes. You can, you know, if you have wavy hair, if you have dry hair, colored hair, all of those things that make it hard to find the right hair product. They did a really great job of just creating this cool website that actually delivers great product. So it's also the internet's top rated customized hair care brand. Over 30,000 5-star customer reviews.
So to get started right now, go to functionofbeauty.com/sibling to take your 4-part hair profile quiz and save 20% off your first order. Don't spend another minute in hair misery. Go to functionofbeauty.com/sibling to let them know that we sent you. That's right. we sent you. That's functionofbeauty.com/sibling.
So we wrote a song with him called Hallelujah, and I think he brings things out of people that not a lot of people can.
Really?
He really, yeah. Like, we wrote like one of our most personal songs to date about being, like, it's a song about being sisters.
Oh.
I love
it. It's called Hallelujah. And we wrote it with Toby JJ, Tobias Jessa Jr.
He's really talented.
Right, so we basically, like, Tobias had kind of been talking to us about, you know, like, what is
By the way,
like?
I love that song. We're sitting here not saying that, but I love that song.
Oh, thank you.
I love all of your guys' music.
Oh, thanks.
It's okay.
Thank you. It's fine. You don't need to I'll compliment you till the cows come home. Bless me, forget I was the one that brought up Dawson's Creek.
I know. Okay. It was very shocking.
I'm really okay with this being a one-sided relationship. I'm truly okay with that. I will bow at the temple of Oliver Hudson till the
No,
day
I'm a giver. I'm a giver.
How many people do you guys write with? Do you write with a lot of different people, or do you write mostly with yourself?
No. That's what's crazy about our relationship with Tobias is, like, he is probably, like, just one of, like, the handful of people we've ever really written with.
Yeah.
You know?
But that, like, that being said, he really did bring something, I think, out of us that we had never really tapped into. And we'd always wanted to write a song about, you know, sisterhood and being sisters and what it's like being sisters and how lucky we are. But it didn't really, like, come to us until we really sat down and each kind of wrote our own story. And then we put it into song. And that's kind
it
of
it might
it
be nice on. Actually for something that personal too, like to actually get like someone to help kind of.
Totally. Yeah. Cause it could turn like real.
Yeah.
Real cheese ball. Like real
it can
real.
Go yeah. squirrel real soon.
Yeah.
Like real soon.
Is this it?
Yeah.
Took one look to realize. Tell them anything and they will sympathize. These arms hold me tight. Old fears help to ease them in my mind. New tears say that they will giant die. Yeah. Well, how'd I get this hallelujah?
It's a cutie.
It's
Ollie,
a fun.
Maybe we should write a song about me.
I know. Right. I was gonna say you guys should start a band.
Yeah, we should form a band. Just don't. He can't sing.
I don't know.
No.
He can do backup. It's just he'll.
Kate thinks I can't sing. I got pipes. It's authentic pipe. You know?
Yeah.
It's authentic pipe.
It's golden, not trained.
Golden
it's not,
pipes.
Yeah,
golden
it's not
pipes.
Trained. It's just pure real. Soul. Pure
Honestly,
soul.
Honestly, studio magic is a real thing. You can do anything in there.
That's right.
It's true. We'll get someone else to sing your parts live.
There you go.
Was one of you closer with the other? Was there ever like a dynamic shift? Were you guys all... You know, were your parents really kind of, well, that's like a million questions. But let me just start with the dynamic.
Well, I think what really changed, honestly, like we were all, I mean, obviously we're still siblings. So we would fight all the time. Like we're not the Partridge Family. So like we would fight all the time. But I think honestly, when Essie got her license, that was like when everything changed because Essie could drive us around.
But also I would say that like, I feel like Essie, you and like when we're talking about like being younger, like I feel like you and I had a really strong relationship and like Alana was kind of like our little like we would boss Alana around.
We would boss Alana around a lot.
There's videos of it too.
Like, there's evidence of like Danielle literally sitting on a stool and she dropped her pick in front of her.
Well, to be fair, like the stool was really high and I was like playing it trying to, like, I couldn't reach down to get the pick and I'd be like, Alana, go grab my pick.
Can you grab a pick? And it's literally by her feet. And I was like on the other side of the fucking room. And I'd be like, I literally like went, I was like, okay. you see my little head like going in and like picking up picks. And
it's almost, that's,
you guys just like,
that's almost rite of passage shit though. Like I see my boys doing that too. You know, where Bodie is my middle boy, but younger than Wilder. And Wilder's like, Bodie, like, go get me this or do this. And if I ever see it, I'm like, get it yourself, dude.
I know. You know,
but it happens all the time where Bodhi's running around for Wilder.
For whatever reason, our parents were like, maybe we were just like really good about like just doing it without our parents like either noticing or like.
Mom and Dad, like they were like Esty, you always sat in the passenger seat.
If I'm the oldest.
Like the oldest always sat in the passenger. Like yeah. You had.
There was no like shotguns.
Oh,
no.
Permanent shotgun.
Esty had permanent shotgun. Yeah. Esty still has permanent shotgun.
Yeah, no shit. Or I'm the one driving. Miss, I always have permanent shotgun. You didn't get your license until you turned 18. I drove you everywhere.
Aggression.
Did you really not get your license till you were 18?
I didn't get my license till I was 18.
Because she had us to drive her everywhere.
I was like, I didn't need it. I was like, I didn't need it. Because the thing is like, I have the best sisters in the world. When I got my braces off in the end of freshman year, I was finally allowed to go out with Esty and Danielle because then that was like the most embarrassing thing about me. I was like, I had braces. Like, I couldn't sneak in places because I had braces. Like,
yeah,
the bouncer would be like, for real? Like, are you trying? You're trying to sneak into this bar. You have like you brought your like toddler sister like with braces. Like, no, you're not getting in. Like, please. So, like, the second that I got my braces off, that's like when I was like, okay.
Well, I got Danielle and Alana fake IDs when Alana was 14 and Danielle was 17.
What? Yeah. 17, I can understand. I had a fake ID when I was 16. I still can't believe they let me in places. I looked ridiculously young.
You like gave me your ID and you got like a new one. And then when I was like, 16, I would go and like get cigarettes. Like I'd be like, I'm 18, I'm 19 or whatever.
Yeah, but 14 trying to pass for 21.
I know.
It hardly ever worked.
But the reason is because me, Danielle, and Alana had this like very, very, very like deep passion for LA bands. Mm-hmm. And like going to see live music. And the thing about LA like, venues Chief? Is they're all 21 and over. Chief being one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chief.
But yeah, I mean, it wasn't, my parents also like trusted like speaking to dynamics, like I am such an intense bulldog when it comes to protecting my sisters. And like, I make it abundantly clear that no one is going to fuck with them because I get so like acutely aggro when I feel like they're in danger or that someone's messing with them. Like, I just see red.
Ollie's like the opposite with me. I'm like, I'm in danger. He's like, you're fine. I'll be right back.
Like, let me finish my cigarette.
I'd be like, Ollie, I feel really unsafe. He'd be like, I'll be back in an hour.
Like, it's all in your head. You're good. So it sounded like you guys, for the most part, were all pretty tight. You fought like sisters, but it was never anything that was bad.
Right. And honestly, that's we get that question. I wonder if you guys get it too. Like, do you guys fight all the time? Like, that's the most asked question.
Mm-hmm. Like, what do you guys fight about?
Yeah, like
people are like obsessed with us fighting. We don't really fight.
We don't really fight either. Ollie and I don't fight. We'll disagree about something or we'll have like I'll be like that wasn't cool, but there's no like fighting.
No, yeah. I know. And usually the thing that comes after, like, do you guys fight? We're like, no, they're like, they'll be like, oh, well, I can't even, I hate my brother. Or,
I can't imagine being in a band with my sibling.
Well, I usually just hold a lot in and then it all comes out irrationally in some tirade.
That's some older, that's the older sibling thing.
So did you guys party together? I mean, did you guys a lot? Yeah.
I think that's how Alana kind of got her nickname was like, whenever me and Danielle would go to parties, he would be like, where's the baby?
Where's the baby? Baby Chaim was born.
Baby Chaim was born. Where's the baby? Where's the baby?
So cute.
Well, there was like a loophole. Like randomly, I don't know what my parents were thinking, but like I think to this day, if I was still living with my parents, I would have this curfew. But my curfew was at midnight. Like until I was like 23 years old. Like no. They were like,
for all of us.
At midnight, you have to be home. But if I was with Esty, no curfew.
Oh.
Yeah. Because Esty was like technically my parent.
Now, were you responsible girl? Like, were you?
Oh, like,
Essie was so responsible.
Yeah. The most.
Honestly, you think, like, I would always be like, yeah, Essie's going to let me do whatever I want. Essie was even worse than my parents. Would, like eagle eye me and be like, you're not doing jack shit. Like, you're fucking
I've actually seen that eagle eye in Esty a couple nights.
Yeah, Esty Eagleheim was always my, that was my nickname, living up to my name.
I'll never forget, there was like a huge Valley party that we threw, and it was so fun. And like the party was getting so big that Esty Eagleheim me so hard that it was getting too big that she dropped me home. I was like, dude, I want to stay at the party. And she was like,
absolutely not. I'm driving you home.
How old were you? I don't trust these people.
I think I was like 16.
16.
And she was like, I'm driving you home. And I was like, buzzkill, dude. Like, I want to stay.
I for your own good, dude.
Well, wait, but Danielle, where were you in all of this?
Oh, I was at the party.
Again, I still to this day maintain, like, the reason I felt cool going out was because I had Danielle and Alana with me. They were always so much cooler than I was. It's 100% true. Like, when it comes to, like chill being had, I have no chill. I'm such a nerd and such a dork, and like I was so frantic as a kid. Like, all I wanted was like to be like, I don't know, I wanted to like make friends with people. I came from like a really tiny school, and so like I would go out and I would go to shows, and all I wanted to do was like, you know, I would go see Rilo Kiley at, you know, Silver Lake Lounge, and all I would want to do was like be like friends with them, because mm-hmm. I was like, I idolized them so much. And Danielle and Alana were like my armor. I was like, I have these like two really cool like best friends.
Well Danielle, how did you see Esty? I mean, that's her perception of herself in a way. Did you see her the same way?
No, I mean, I saw Esty as the coolest. Esty.
Okay. I really wasn't that cool.
What are you talking about?
I wasn't that cool. But it was, I was like painfully insecure, and
I still am, and I was always very shy. So like, I would always just be like, Esty.
Well, that was like the cool dynamic is like, there was like this like really talkative, like older sister who would be like, meh, 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 like making all jokes.
Ethel Merman.
And then like, here's like this like cool girl with mystique, like sitting in the corner, like smoking a cigarette and like. And, like, we were kind of the gruesome twosome. And then when Alana came along, it was kind of like we were this,
like douche.
Yeah, Alana, like, kicked the door. Like, let me show you how this is done. Again, I think the common denominator is that we just really loved, like, the LA music scene. And, like, we really supported it. And, like, we loved going to shows. And, again, like, our high school was really, really small. And, you know, there weren't a lot of kids that liked the same music as I did, and was infatuated as I was with like going to see like live music in LA. And so my friends were just kind of like, we're gonna go like to a theater show in downtown because they're doing like Waiting for Godot, and I'd be like, that's cool, but like I really want to go see like Elliott Smith play down the street. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really have anyone to go with, and like I was like, oh, here's these, like I have like two girls in my arsenal, like that can come with me. And like, I would like save up my lunch money to buy tickets. And I did. And I would take them with me. And again, that's like, aww. I think that was what kind of bonded us, is like, I would buy, you know, CDs from Amoeba and Second Spin and play them in the car. I drove carpool. So like, Danielle was in my carpool my senior year and she was a freshman. And then when Alana was a freshman and Danielle was a senior, Alana was in carpool. And like,
Danielle was going to say, like, I was a senior when Alana was a freshman. So it was like in that way, like Esty introduced me to all of her friends. And yeah. Then like Alana was coming in. Like,
I mean, like every senior dude would be like, hey, like, what's the deal with your like sister?
That's not like, true.
Stay the fuck away from her.
Well, hold on. When did the family band break up? And was that a really sad day? And is it on? And is it on VH1 Behind the Music?
Honestly, in my dream. No, it technically we're not broken up. I mean, my parents.
Yeah, we're still very much together.
Rock and Heim is still together to this day.
Rock and Heim comes out probably at every holiday season.
Oppenheim makes usually like makes an appearance like when we're at our biggest show.
Yeah, like yeah. My parents wait. They wait until like they're not coming to see us in like Ohio or like
no.
They're like, no, we're waiting for Radio City. Radio City.
Mm-hmm. We want Radio City. We want the Greek.
We want the Greek. Oh, exactly. We want the Radio Cities.
We want the like Alley Pallies in London. Like they come, they literally come out at every big show. And now they just expect it. That's the thing that's so crazy. Like we won't talk. Like
they bring their own in-ears. They yeah. have like generics. They're like ready.
There was one time, I think, I forget, was it Radio City? I think it might've been Radio City. Where my dad came up to us and was like, so when are we coming on? And we were like, Dad, you're not coming on. What are you talking about? Just go have a good time. Like, go watch the show. It's fine. And then I felt bad. So like the whole, like my dad was like, oh, okay, well. and then I felt bad the whole show. I was like, oh, you know what? Like there's like a microphone that like is on stage that only everybody on stage can hear. So on the microphone, I was like, can someone just go get my parents? Like we'll do Mustang Sally. We do a roaring rendition of Mustang Sally. That's our song. Mm-hmm.
Who's the lead singer on the Mustang
Sally? Oh, my mother.
Yeah. Okay.
It's Donna and the Hyams.
I literally said, I'm not fucking with you. I literally said on the microphone, like, does anyone have eyes on my parents? Like, can you just like tell them we'll do Mustang Sally? And I'm not even kidding you. Like, it felt like it was like Roadrunner.
Yeah. They were just already backstage. Like my mom's like warming up with tea. She's like me, like walking around backstage. My dad's like air drumming. My dad's like stretching and like air drumming and is like ready to fucking go. And I was like, they're professionals. They're professionals.
That's awesome. That's amazing. What amazing memories though, like to have with your parents. It's yeah. pretty
and
cool.
My mom always comes on and like speaks for 20 minutes before she sings because she's yeah. just overwhelmed. Like she'll go on like a whole like monologue and there'll be a spotlight and like fog and she'll just be like, I am just so excited to be here. We're like, Mom, this isn't your show. Like, what are you talking about?
Do you think Esty, because she's the oldest, had the biggest influence on the music that you liked?
For sure.
Oh, 100%.
100%.
And do you remember what that was the most? Like, do you remember what was the most influential music that you guys listened to as kids?
Danielle, what was it, your 13th or 14th birthday when Esty got you all those CDs?
Yeah, like Esty got me a bunch of new CDs, I think, for my 13th birthday. And it was like...
The Boogie Night soundtrack.
Boogie Night soundtrack, yes. Which is so, like, full circle.
Elliot Smith. Ben Queller.
Cat Power.
I think it was also The Strokes.
Animal Collective.
And The Strokes. It was Room on Fire.
I think The Strokes was like the band that really just...
Well, that first album is still one of the great
yeah.
albums.
Yeah. It's yeah. like the best.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I think that was like the big bonding moment. Because before that, it was like, I loved the Spice Girls and Esty liked nu metal. And like,
yeah. you know, I like the Teletubbies. Yeah.
You know, like it was a little squirrely. But then I feel like that the Strokes were like
yeah.
the big yeah. band that really
likes. And also, you can imagine like how excited / jealous Alana and I were when Danielle became a part of Julian's band. In 2009.
I was so bummed.
So jealous. So bummed.
Yeah, like I would be, Esty was a senior in college. I was a senior in high school. And Danielle was like touring the world with Julian Casablancas. And I was like, what? I mean, I was obviously so stoked, obviously. But I was like, what is going on?
How was that touring at that age with them?
Oh, yeah. It was crazy. I was like 19.
Yeah.
You know, and we were honestly, we were playing shows as Haim in between, like when I would come home. Like, I feel like we played a show together at the Troubadour with Chief, like in one of those breaks. And it was just crazy. Like, I was touring. Yeah. Like, it was just fucking.
But yeah. Like, we did that show. And, you know, Danielle had kind of, we had just opened up for Julian on tour. And I think that was kind of like Danielle did double duty. Danielle played with Haim and then played with Julian. And I think that was kind of the moment we were like, okay, we're fucking doing this. Like we've had a taste of this touring yeah. situation yeah. and we're doing it.
When was the moment where it was like, okay, this is what we're doing and this is it. This is it. You know, was there a moment when that happened?
I really feel like we didn't have like the confidence to like leave at like we would play shows in LA forever, and like we could never get a good recording to like promote,
represent what we were
wanted.
You know, we didn't really know a lot about like production. We got really into GarageBand. Danielle's like a GarageBand like aficionado.
Did you know who you were though? Had you discovered who you were at that point?
I mean, if there was a point from, I mean, we started playing shows as Haim in 2007 and we didn't get signed until 2012. So in between that time, like Danielle, remember, like we were all playing just shows in LA, just hoping to tour. Yeah, like tour one day. Like the idea was to just like, hopefully just keep playing and at one point like headline the Troubadour. And I feel like that there were some songs that were left over from
The Wire.
Yeah, our song The Wire we wrote in like 2008.
That was I think the only one that survived.
Yeah. But I think we really like honed our live show. Just I mean it's like normal band shit. You just like grind. And by the time we kind of went to the UK to get signed, like our show, we had our shit together because we had been just like grinding for 6 years or whatever. However. And that actually really helped us because that was around the time that like bedroom pop and people were like getting signed just from putting out like good sounding stuff. But like when it came to their live show, like they didn't really know what to do. And like, we were just like, we know how to do it.
We're like, we're doing on record, but
we don't know how to make a recording, but we definitely know how to play live.
What about your songwriting process? I mean, is it pretty fluid or is there contention ever or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing, there's obviously times where like you think that like your words are like insanely profound. Like you like write down this like profound thing and then you like show it to the group and they're like, you're super emo, like please stop. But like the thing is like there's, it's just like it just happens. Like we in the beginning, I feel like when we were like younger, it was like a process that was like super like intense. And I feel like since we've been, this is our third record now. And I think that like by at this point now, it kind of is just like second nature writing together.
Yeah. I also think like we've realized that it's something that we have to work on actively. It's like you have to just show up either like every day, like when we're trying to write new music, it's like, all right, like let's just try and write something every day for the next month, because if not, like I think when we were first writing music, it was like, oh, I had this idea for a song, like that would happen like once every couple months or something, where like an idea just kind of comes to you. I think it's something that we've learned that like we have to actually like show up every day and just yeah, like just try to work that muscle, because that one idea that comes to you in the shower only happens like twice a year.
And it is a muscle because like, you know, you even if you sit down, it's like you almost have to write 100 songs to write one great one. Like
100%. 100%.
And then you think about all these people who just they're just like always writing and they're so prolific and they write all these like songs and you're just like, oh my God, but they're constantly writing music.
Yeah. And that was like a big lesson. I mean, and it's also so hard to not judge what you are writing. The thing that we've learned is like, don't sit down and try to just and write a whole song. Like you can just sit down and just write a part. It can be a verse. It can be a chorus. It could be a bridge. As long as you're just putting something down and try so hard not to judge it, you can judge it later. Just like put it down so you have something like, this is what I worked on yesterday. And then you can judge it later. That's like, that's been huge for us.
Yeah. This is getting me inspired right now. I'm this is great, guys.
But it's true, though. It's true. It's just almost getting it out a lot of the times just helps so much, you know, because I would imagine that you can get so specific and perfectionist. And sometimes that just holds so much creativity. Yeah.
And just like judge it when it's coming out. You're like, this sucks. Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah. Or just
and
like,
you have nothing.
It's like writing in general. That's why, like, when people have writer's block, they're like, just write. Just like stream of consciousness. Just like keep your pen moving, you know?
Yeah.
Or you brain dump.
And what about albums and stuff? I mean, do you work with concepts? Are you conscious of trying to change your sound? Not change, but sort of evolve or do something different, you know?
I think we honestly evolve naturally. It's like a weird thing. I think, I mean, when I look back at our first record, it like feels like we were like babies. Like it's like,
we were
babies.
It's like, you literally were babies.
They were babies.
I think it really just, when we first started recording music, we honestly were so fucking green. Like we were really, like we had no idea what we were doing. thankfully we found producers that were like, that could take like the gibberish that we would say and be like, this, we want this to feel like blue, or like, we want this to sound like this. And like, they really like, thankfully, like, patient with us. And I think now, coming from like our first record now to our third record, we know the vocabulary, we know exactly what we want things to sound like. And I think it really just, like, when you hear our new record when it comes out, by far this is our favorite record. Okay. I think that, like, by far, I mean, it's like, this is my favorite child, talking about children, right. my children. But yeah, it just kind of happens naturally. There's like, we get inspired by different things, and it really is, like, especially with this record, it really was. I mean, there's so many different genres on our new record, and it was really like what Danielle was saying, like, not being scared of a certain genre and not being like super hard on yourself about what the song is sounding like. So
do you ever fight over what songs you think should be singles, or do you ever, like, how would you remedy a difference of opinion, or are you guys pretty much on the same page, like, that's gonna be our first single?
There have been songs that, like, I am super passionate about that Essie and Danielle are not passionate about, which, well, not passionate about, but like, there was, like, on our last record, our first single was called Want You Back, and it was like a song that just, like, refused to make sense. Like, we did so many different versions of it, and it just wasn't working, and I always loved it. I was like, I love this song so much, like, I really feel like we're sleeping on this song, like, we need to put this song out. And it took, like, me being like, we're fucking figuring this out, and then it ended up becoming our first single. So, like, there's, like, things like that where it's like, one of us, if there's, like, a song where they're like, oh, we forgot about this song, it's like that, we're very open to, like, shit like
Danielle
that.
How I was working with Ezra, Father of the Bride is, like, one of my favorite fucking songs.
I love that.
I love it. My kids love it too.
It was so great. You know, like, we're also huge, like, Vampire Weekend fans.
Yeah.
When they first came out, and we've, like, you know, become friends over the years. And my boyfriend Ariel, who produces our stuff, was producing that album. So they were like, always, we have a home studio. And so, like, Ezra would just be over and he'd be like, can you put a harmony on this? I'd be like, sure. And it kind of just turned into me being featured on the album, which is awesome.
Yeah,
I love that album.
That album is so good.
It's such a good record. I know.
Oh wait, but I want to ask about the song that just came out.
Oh yeah.
How did you do this? Did you already? It's called I Know Alone.
Uh huh. Okay. Yeah.
Did you write it in quarantine, or did you already have
it? No, it's so weird. It's so strange. It's like fucking crazy. We wrote it like a year and a half ago.
And it was always going to be after the steps, it was always going to come out after the steps. Like, we had this plan of like what we wanted to put out, and it was always going to come out the time that it did. And it literally, it was just super weird
timing.
But yeah, it's like become this like
quarantine.
Crazy.
When does your album drop, as they say in the music biz?
June 26th is when it comes out.
Well, did you read? I mean, Allison and I, our producer, we were just talking about the Atlantic article about concerts. Did you?
Is it depressing?
Is it depressing?
I've just been getting depressing news. I know. I don't know if my heart can handle it. That honestly is like such a, like, the sad part of like what's happening. Like, we were so excited to go on tour, and like, I don't even,
we also like made this album like really tour, making sure that like with playing live like in mind when making this album. Like, oh, this is gonna be amazing live when we
play it
part. Yeah. And, you know, so it's really weird.
God. Yeah.
Well, you'll get there, but it's just, you know, it's one of those things when you love live music, or you love to experience, you know, live music. It's sad.
But it also does give me hope that like when it actually is safe to go to concerts, like people are gonna like rage even harder.
Oh,
it's gonna be insane.
So hard. I'm just gonna rage. Like at every festival that I go to, it's just gonna be a new
feeling. Yeah. It's gonna be so like elevated, and vibration's gonna be insane.
It's gonna be like the summer of love.
I was just about to say that. It's going to be like the 60s and after World War II. Like, everyone's probably going to start fucking, and there's going to be like a new baby boom. It's just going to be like, I'll just fuck you. Like, we can touch.
Oh, yeah. Finally.
I'm literally like, I mean, like, that's like literally like, did you see my face, how it glowed up?
And you got very excited.
I'm like, yes, exactly.
That's so funny. Okay. Okay. Speed round. We got to hurry. Okay. One word to describe Esty. Alana and Danielle, you have
badass.
To do one.
Badass. Good. One word to describe Esty. You're a party. I feel like you are a party.
A badass party is so cute coming from your sisters. Like
a badass party.
Okay, one word to describe Danielle.
Prolific.
Oh,
okay.
Lord.
I'll take it.
Okay, someone to college.
a party? No, I'm just kidding. No, is you're like, I think you're the, it's like hard to put in a word. No, but it's hard to say a word, like, because you're,
you can say it. You can say a sentence.
I want to say, like, intelligent. I feel like Danielle's like
intelligent.
Beautiful.
Yes, you are. Oh God.
And so you're intelligently prolific. I love it. Okay, Alana, one word to describe baby.
Fun.
Yes, you didn't go to college.
I like fun. Okay.
You're fun.
You're like, wait, I feel like I have like a character, like you're Baby Yoda.
Yeah, you also, that's true. You're a sage. She's a sage.
A fun sage Baby Yoda. Oh.
She's a fun sage Baby Yoda.
So would you say I was wise?
Wise. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. You are wise beyond your years, truly. You are truly wise. Alana's given me some of the best advice I've ever received. And she's 6 years younger than me.
Who's more organized of the three of you?
Danielle.
Am I?
I think it's me, by the way.
It's Esty? Okay, Esty can take me. It. Fine.
I'm organized.
Best style?
Danielle.
Bossier. The bossiest.
Alana.
I would say me.
Alana.
Who's the funniest?
Esty.
Me. Me.
We have a face coming from Alana. Alana's like, are you fucking kidding me right now?
Give it to Esty.
Oh, but baby's sort of like, well.
Yeah, baby's like, that's
You're
crazy.
Funny too. You're funny too, but I'm funnier than you.
Well, I have my moments. I feel like I'm really funny.
Danielle.
Yeah, Danielle. Hold on. Danielle, break the tie. Who's funnier?
I was going to say, to Esty's credit, growing up, Esty was so fucking funny growing up. So Esty made it okay for me to feel like I could also be funny girl. Like, Esty was like always the funniest, always the life of the party. And it was like, you know, I was like, oh, if Esty can do it, like, I can do it. Like, everyone loves Esty. I'm just, I'll be funny too. So, Esty, you get it. You can have the funny.
Rats off to you.
Would get you guys, like, if you needed an upgrade at a hotel, if you needed to get yourself out of a
Esty.
Ticket.
Esty, easily. Like, Esty does that now.
I do it now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She just offered to basically be my lawyer and negotiate shit.
Yeah, I got you. I act as my own, like, I pretend to be this character named Ashley.
Mm-hmm.
And I call ahead and I'm like, you know, Esty Heim is checking in, you know, she's going to need, can she please have, like, I don't know, a bottle of water when she gets there.
So you are your own assistant, is what you're saying?
Yes, Esty's her own assistant.
Ashley, Esty
doesn't
Heim's
seem too demanding.
Assistant.
You know, a
bottle
of water
would be nice.
Not a lot to ask for. Yeah.
You know, Liz, I like the simpler things. Yeah. I'm not high maintenance.
Who cries the most?
Esty.
Oh, really?
Or you know what? It might be Danielle. It might be Danielle.
When was the last time you guys cried?
Yesterday.
You cried yesterday?
I cried yesterday.
Happy cry or sad cry?
Diane Keaton cried, both.
Right, like Diane Keaton, like. essentially.
I love those cries, though. Those
I cried.
Great
I, just,
cries.
I cried. I cried right before I was on. Came on here. I tried to do a meditation, and I just like started crying.
Aww. Well, yeah. I think that means you're doing it right.
Yeah.
No, because I was mad that I couldn't do it right, so I just cried.
Well, that's why I don't do it, because I can never get it right.
I'm like, something is going on with Oliver. I need to, when we get off of this, I need to I need to check in. There's still things,
the unpacking is still, it's a process.
I know.
Months. I mean, the layers of this figurative onion are like annoying me. it's like, what? There's another layer? Come on.
Oh, it's the largest onion anyone has ever seen.
It's the, like, just get me to the core. God damn it.
But it's so much fun peeling all the layers and crying after each layer.
Who's the most dramatic?
Esty.
Who calls each other like the most?
I call everybody.
You do.
I call you.
Esty.
Okay, fine. I'll give it to you. You definitely are the best about picking up your phone. That is for sure.
I like, there have been times where it's like, I'm literally like breaking up with my boyfriend and a fucking sister will call and be like, what? Sorry, 1 second. Can you just hold that thought really quick? I have to go pick up my phone. From my sister. Like, I pick up every phone call from my family.
It's true.
Who's the worst driver of you three?
Alana.
100% me.
100% Alana.
Oh.
100% Alana.
I wear with pride.
Oh, good. Okay.
Who's the better cook?
Danielle.
Who is the better dancer?
Esty.
Okay. If you were to cast you guys as like who would play you in the movie The Haim Sisters?
Your mom.
Meryl Streep.
Your mom.
I call Meryl Streep.
Okay, no, Meryl Streep. You guys, you can't cast yourself. It has to be your sisters casting you.
We can't cast ourselves?
You guys are First Wives Club. It's like,
okay, Danielle's for sure Diane Keaton.
Okay.
Esty, I would say either like Barbra Streisand.
Ooh, that would be a good one.
Mm-hmm. Like Babs would play like an epic Esty. Like, mm-hmm. And then
Like in the way we were, like with like a.
I sat next to her ex-husband at a Shabbat once. I sat next to Elliot Gould, and let me tell you, we had a great time. We talked a lot, and at the end of the night, everyone was going home, and he looked at me, and he was like, "You know, you remind me so much of a young Barbra."
And then Esty's head just exploded. Like, Esty can't fit in a doorway now.
Esty was like,
"No, I'm actually a hologram of myself right now. I died that night. I'm like, I'm just deceased. I'm like, not. I'm not here right now."
Who would play me?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Alana.
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep.
Let's go,
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep.
You guys, this is a very different age bracket of a movie, but this is like you guys old. You guys just did you guys like it's like funny casting.
Oh, like this is like literally how we think of each other.
Like, can you think of like
it's hilarious? Like, what is this movie?
It's like Barbra Streisand, Meryl Streep. And
Diane Keaton and Babs. I'm like, we're in a very different
that's
era.
That's really funny. It's so true.
The band of Meryl Streep, Barbra Streisand, and Diane Keaton would sell out Dodger Stadium.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Easily. That would be big.
Easily.
We need Bette Midler in there somewhere, though.
Yeah, I would I call Bette.
Okay. Who's a rule breaker? Who's like the most
Alana,
mischievous? Okay,
hands good. Down, Alana,
100%.
First celebrity crush,
first Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Oh my god,
writer
Devin Sawa.
Oh my god, Devin Sawa. I remember that guy.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas was on Home Improvement.
Yeah,
and he played the Lion King. Okay. He was the voice of Simba.
Mine was Ryder Strong from Boy Meets World.
Yeah, very Jonathan Taylor Thomas-esque.
Yes.
Yeah, he's same kind of vibe. Yeah.
Devin Sawa was sort of a darker bad boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense that Danielle liked
him. Interesting.
Yeah. Brooding.
What about first concert you ever saw?
First concert?
Doobie Brothers?
Yes.
Doobie Brothers.
Stop. Cool.
That's
I've been on a Doobie Brothers kick this quarantine.
I know. It's true. Taking it to the streets.
I will never forget when at that concert I smelled weed for the first time. I was like a full baby. And I remember returning to Esty and being like, I remember the whole concert. I was like,
yeah, I was like
what is that smell?
And what Esty is that?
Like,
as he was like, that's weed. And I was like, it's awful.
And then flash forward to when I was 13. Different story.
Different story.
My parents didn't take us to like we wanted to go see the Spice Girls. We wanted to go see like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. And my parents were like, lol, that's really funny. If you didn't go to any of those, like the epic Britney shows that happened when like I was in like middle school and high school, like wasn't allowed to go. Right. My parents would, you know.
What if you girls could like live in a decade? What do you think? Where do you think you'd live?
The '70s, probably.
Seventies.
Yeah. Because you had disco and you also had like sick classic rock and like rock.
Yeah. We'd all be there together.
I think so.
I feel like just like the like notion of like my parents talk about it all the time. Like when, I mean, they were like disco diehards, like
diehards.
Literally, like you would practice all week your dance moves with your dance partner
at a dance, like at a dance studio.
Sounds how amazing. Fucking cool is
sounds
that?
It was like so cool. Like my mom had a dance partner and they would like go to like a little dance like place that like had like rooms and they would practice their dances. And then on Friday night, you go to the fucking dance club with a light up dance floor and you show off what you practice. It was like a job. It was so like a fun. Full job.
Imagine and, like, you and Danny. Should... I mean, you and Danny practicing. I mean, every night?
Every night. And then going and, like, showing off your moves, like, your couples dancing.
Like, my dream is to, like, open up a club like that in L.A. Like, all I want to do is just dance. I don't need anything else.
You guys, dance moves are one thing. It's the outfit.
I know. And the clothing.
Okay, guys, who's the politest to strangers?
Me. I think we all are, actually.
Yeah.
I would say
Danielle though, because Danielle's the quietest in the family. So she's just innately the most polite.
We're all really friendly.
No, for sure.
Nice to people.
Who's the best in a stressful situation?
Esty.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. And let's do the last one.
We ask this to everybody, but it's a two parter. The first part is what is something that your sister has that you would love to take for yourself, meaning a quality or something that you could have as your own. And then on the flip side of it, what is something you would alleviate from them if you could take it away to sort of make their life better in some way or to take away any stressors or pains or anything like that?
Let's go baby first. Okay. So you guys both talk about Alana.
I wish I could take Alana's wisdom and in like in Yiddish we have this word sechel. She has street, it's not just that she has like good advice, but she has like street smarts, and I'd want to alleviate I think just Alana's very sensitive and I'd want to alleviate that from her. I don't want, she's, you know, I think her sensitivity can be a good thing, but I think, you know, it can also be, you know, crippling sometimes. And I would want to take that away.
I'll take it. Mm-hmm. I love it.
All right, Danielle, okay. For
I baby. Would want your ability to make a good toast. Oh, make a good speech.
Like a speech.
No, not like sourdough.
No, like
I was like, Alana can like make like a speech.
It's true.
Like very. She loves a speech.
A speech. Oh.
She loves a speech.
I want that ability because I'm horrible at it. what would I want to? Oh God, take. I don't know.
I'm perfect.
I mean, I feel like it's the same with me. Like when I feel like it's the family trait, like I feel like we get overwhelmed and like we're like unable to like see anything other than like when we're overwhelmed. I feel like I do that. I would want to take that away from you because I
please take it. I honestly don't want it. She doesn't want it.
It's so cute. Okay, Danielle. Now we're focusing on Danielle.
Okay.
Okay. I would want Danielle's passion as well as ability. I think that she's one of the most like driven and passionate people, like perfectionist, like extraordinaire. And I wish I had more of that. And what I'd want to take away from her is her like getting overwhelmed and like anxiety, and I guess it also goes back to like sensitivity and stuff. I think we're all like very, very sensitive people. And I'd want to alleviate like the pain and the anxiety that she has sometimes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Last but not least, big sis.
I would.
No, Alana has to go.
Oh.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
Typical for a baby. No one cares about me.
I'm fuck sorry.
Everyone. I'm fucking done. No. I would take Danielle's creativity. Danielle is, I honestly think creatively, like, it's like with everything that she does, she like, her brain is always in the future. She just like always is just so fucking good all the time. Just she blows my mind all the time. And what I would take away from you is probably stress. Danielle, you know, it's a lot of stress. Danielle holds a lot of things on her shoulders. I don't
We're
want her
sensitive
to be
Sallys.
Anymore.
We're very sensitive.
Yes.
Okay. Big sissy time.
Sis. Okay, Esty. Oh, if the one thing I wish I had, I also tell you this all the time, is that Esty has like zero fear. She like actually does not have fear. Like in life, like she has snuck me into so many things without any fear. Like to the point where I like get super stressed out about it. I'm like, that's not gonna happen. I don't know what I'm gonna do. Like, what's happening? She's like, calm the fuck down. I got you. Like she's always had zero fear. What I would take away, obviously, I don't want you to have diabetes anymore. I would love for you to just be healthy. I would love to take that away and alleviate. I think both of us would probably say the same thing.
That's going to be mine too.
And I just, I don't want you to have stress over health. That's like the thing that I think you stress about the most is that of your health. So I wouldn't want to take that away from you.
I feel like mine are so like along the same lines. Yeah. I mean, Esty like definitely like doesn't have any sort of fear. Her ability to talk. Esty can talk to anyone. Like
specifically for Danielle.
I'm like very shy. Esty can talk to anyone for hours. I wish I had that for myself. I'm so bad at that. I'm like have social anxiety. So I would definitely take that. Yeah, and obviously I want to rid Esty of her diabetes.
Oh, so how are you with that? Meaning like it's a crazy time. I mean, where's your fear level at this point? Do you just staying inside?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you talk about fear. It's like, that's the only thing that I'm like fearful of is like my health. Everything else in life, I think I just kind of have this trust in the universe that everything's going to be okay. And I think that's where my fearlessness comes from. And I also am just, I don't know. I've from like a really, really, really young age, I guess I've always felt like, why not try? And now with this coronavirus, I have to kind of rein that in a little bit and be like, no, like you need to not trust in the universe that you'll be okay and stay the fuck inside and be as careful as possible. I mean, I think.
Are you very open about your diabetes? Do you talk about it a lot?
I take every opportunity I possibly can to talk about it because I think that like it's important to like raise awareness and also like have a sense of community. And I like to make people with autoimmune disease kind of, I want them to not feel so alone. And I think there is like a loneliness that kind of sets in when you have an autoimmune disease because your body's quite literally turning against itself. And like, it can be a little frustrating and isolating and, but yeah, it's like, you know, the way that, again, I'm lucky that I have Danielle and Alana with me on tour because I don't think I would be able to really like thrive on tour the way that I do if I didn't have Danielle and Alana because they're so like caring when it comes to like the food that I'm going to eat. I mean, diabetes is a 24-hour job you can't clock out of. So like, and the mental component to that is really intense. And like, there's definitely days when I'm like, fuck this, I'm done. Like I'm done caring about this shit. I don't care what I eat. I'm not going to take my insulin. I don't give a fuck. And you can't do anything about it. And then I have Dan Alana being like, that's not true. There is something you can do about it. You can like rein it in for a second. Like everything's going to be okay. What do you need? Like, And I'm lucky that I have two people that care about me as much as they do in my life. I mean, of course, my parents care as well, but like, I don't see my parents on a day-to-day basis like I see Deanna Lana. And in quarantine, it's been a lot of like, do you have enough insulin? Do you have enough, like, do you have enough CGMs? Like, do you have enough supplies for your insulin pump? Like, how are you feeling today? It's like a lot of like us checking in with each other literally every day to make sure that, you know, each of us is okay. And again, like a lot of type 1 diabetics don't have that. And that's everything I've been hearing from them during quarantine. Like there's like a community of type 1 diabetic girls that I talk to. And that's kind of been the hardest part is like, because most of them are in isolation and living by themselves and like quarantining by themselves is like, they don't really have people to kind of interact with in that way. And like to talk to and be like, I'm really not feeling, you know, the best up here today. I had a high blood sugar. I don't feel well. Like, and so I guess I try to be that for as many, you know, type 1 diabetic girls as possible. But, you know, again, I'm lucky that I have Dingo and Alana. They are my biggest cheerleaders. Every time like I have a low, they're there. Every time I like have a, like a victory, like I have a, I get test results back that are good. Like they're right there to like congratulate me and like make me feel like I'm making progress. And, but yeah, it's, you know, it's not, it's definitely not easy, but you know, That's great. There's good days and bad days. Yeah.
I think it's really important. You know, this is, I think a lot of people, whether it's type 1, type 2, pre-diabetic, this is a very, very scary, you know, until they have treatments that make it a little bit more understandable, you know, it's just a scary time. And it's, I think it's amazing if someone has any kind of platform to like, just talk about their own experiences. It goes such a long way and people feel so alone. You're what you're saying. And it's, you know, they feel alone. And
I mean, when I was first diagnosed, I think the only person that really ever talked about being diabetic was Mary Tyler Moore. And I just remember like being like, I like great, but like, you know, there wasn't really like someone that was speaking outwardly about like, I have this, this is what I've gone through. You're going to be fine. And also, you know, I think it also comes down to like the people around you, including like doctors, which I think is so crazy, is like telling diabetics that like they won't be able to do the things that they've dreamt of doing because of their disease and how it's almost like they almost treat it like it's, yeah, like it's going to be something that's going to keep you from your dreams. I told my doctor at 14, I want to be a touring musician. And he was like, that's going to be hard. I would maybe find something else to do. And the other day, my mom was telling me how her best friend's neighbor just got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 17. And she wanted to go into the Navy. And the Navy was like, well, you can't now because you're diabetic. And, you know, that was her dream. And like, granted, like, you know, and there's things like my dad, you know, there's this like this infamous story. My dad wanted to be a pilot. And we've all seen Little Miss Sunshine. Basically, what happened to my dad happened in Little Miss Sunshine. Like his whole life, he wanted to be a pilot. All he dreamt about was being a pilot. And then he took a test and they were like, that's funny, you're colorblind. Can't happen. And he was like, I demand a retest. I'm not colorblind. And then lo and behold, they did like the numbers test and he was colorblind. And I think his whole life, he just kind of felt like, well, that sucks. But I think when it's something like type 1 diabetes, that's like this thing where like everyone, you know, I know the statistics. I know what I'm dealing with. But I think it's also important to have this sense of like hope and like think about your like the things you want to do in your life and your future and be, you know, ferocious and, you know, passionate about the things that you want to do and not let something like that get in the way. But it's frustrating when it's something that's physical and like your health that's stopping you from achieving your dreams.
I'm grateful that you talk about it. I think it's awesome.
And it is like, listen, like every day, like I said, every day is different and every day is like going into it being like, okay, I'm just going to do my best. And like, if I have a bad day, I have a bad day and like you move on. But you know, like I said, yes, I do think that, you know, we're writing our journeys and we're writing our lives day by day. But again, I'm lucky that I have two people that are truly supportive.
Well, if you need a third and you get lonely, I'll do a little Zoom.
I don't know what it's like to live with boys. Like, what's going to happen if we have sons? I don't think I'm going to know what to do.
It's great. You know what? It's the best. I feel super lucky to have all brothers. But then at the same time, every time I talk to sisters, there's this little like aching thing in me. I'm like, I never had a sister.
You can hop onto our side. You can hop onto our side anytime you want.
Okay.
All right.
I love it. I'll come play the flute.
Sibling Revelry is executive produced by Kate Hudson, Oliver Hudson, and Sim Sarna.
Supervising producer is Allison Bresnik.
Editor is Josh Windisch.
Music by Mark Hudson, a.k.a. Uncle Mark.